Good afternoon and welcome to this special live broadcast from the Linda WMC Northeast Public Radio's Performing Arts Studio. I'm Alan Shartok. We've gathered here today with our sponsor, Scenic Hudson, to discuss the controversial topic of PCBs and the Hudson River. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, is poised to sign off on General Electric's cleanup of toxic PCBs in the Hudson River, despite claims by Scenic Hudson and others that the project has failed to meet its goals to protect human health and the environment. To that end, we have screened a film by the acclaimed filmmaker John Bauermaster, PCBs, GE, and the EPA's Toxic Legacy. Meanwhile, for its part, GE says it has completed dredging New York's Upper Hudson, an engineering and logistical feat for more than a decade in the making, an accomplishment the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency called a historic achievement. I also want to make it clear that should General Electric wish to hold a forum on this issue, we welcome them with an open offer to join us for a discussion. Joining us today to discuss the issue and film is Scenic Hudson president and a great hero, personal hero for me, Ned Sullivan. Welcome, Ned.
Thank you, Alan.
Joining us also is David Carpenter, a long friend of WAMC, director of the Institute for Health and Environment at the University at Albany. David, welcome.
Thank you, Alan.
And New York State Assemblywoman Carrie Werner, a Democrat from the 113th District, Round Lake, New York. Welcome, Assemblywoman Werner.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, I'm delighted to see you all here, and I'm delighted to see those of you who have come out to talk to us about this. So, Ned Sullivan, perhaps I could open it up with you, and you could start us out, and then we could hear from your colleagues on the panel about, you know, what they think, 5 minutes or so?
Thank you, Alan, and thank you again for your great leadership of the station and for creating this important opportunity for the public to learn more about the PCB contamination of the river and why it's so important for us to have additional cleanup mandated by the Environmental Protection Agency. EPA did require General Electric to conduct one of the nation's largest Superfund cleanups ever over the last 6 years. And while significant progress has been made in the health of the river as a result of that, two federal agencies, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, have gone public with concerns that they've had for some many years and stated that the cleanup that EPA mandated and that GE has completed has not completed the work that's required to achieve a healthy Hudson River. On the contrary, they've identified roughly 136 acres of contamination that is equivalent in toxicity to the PCBs that have been dredged from the river that must be removed to achieve the very goals that EPA has stated at the outset they were going to achieve by this cleanup. And we now have a public dispute among these federal agencies and U.S. Fish and Wildlife and NOAA. Importantly, they are charged by federal law as the natural resource trustees, along with New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation, to ensure that once the cleanup is complete, the overall health of the river and its natural resources will be fully restored. And they are saying they can't do their job. They can't design a restoration program unless these remaining PCBs are taken out of the river. The good news is that they think that just another two or so seasons of dredging would do the job. So we are very, very close to having a river that is poised for long-term restoration to full health. But EPA is failing to exercise the authority that it has to require General Electric to do that work. That is a huge disappointment. They are failing to use authority that they clearly have by law, and within the very agreement that they signed with General Electric requiring them to conduct the cleanup. It's quite clear, it's explicit in that agreement that if it's found that the goals of the cleanup are not going to be met, EPA can call on GE and require GE to conduct additional action.
So, Ned, who got it wrong in the first place? In other words, It was an agreement. Why was it so messed up?
Well, Alan, the way the Superfund program works is that EPA is required to give the responsible party, the polluter, the opportunity to perform the cleanup work on its own and voluntarily, if you will. And if the company refuses, then EPA can do it itself and go to court to get the money back. But that gives the polluter a lot of power, a lot of leverage, because EPA no longer has significant resources to conduct that kind of a cleanup. It used to be a super fund, but Congress has stripped away the funding source, and it's subject to an annual appropriation. And so GE had a lot of leverage in the negotiation with EPA, and EPA didn't require as much of an extensive enough cleanup at the outset. But then afterward, there was additional sampling done, and they discovered that there was three times the amount of pollution in the river than when they set the cleanup plan. And rather than go back and renegotiate the deal with GE, they said, let's go ahead and let's conduct the cleanup. And so that failure to require a more extensive cleanup, that was the first mistake. But the most important mistake came more recently. Once the cleanup was about to be wrapped up and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and NOAA had blown the whistle on this inadequate cleanup, EPA had the ability to say, okay, hold on, time out. We're going to conduct a review called a five-year review. We're going to find out through that technical review, through consultation with our fellow agencies, and we're going to find out whether we're on track or not. And only then, if we find we're on track, will we allow GE to decommission the cleanup operation. That's what Fish and Wildlife called on EPA to do. That's what NOAA called on them to do. That's what the environmental groups called on them to do. Courageous leaders like Assemblywoman Werner, communities around the Hudson Valley, the New York Times, every newspaper in the valley, virtually. Everybody said, we need more cleanup.
How much? Oh, we've heard, Ned, that two more years would do the trick. How does anybody know that that's the case?
Well, the extent of the contamination and this 136 or so acres could be handled in two additional seasons of dredging. It's been demonstrated by the cleanup work that has occurred that just two or so more seasons could do the job. We think it could be done in two. And so this is not a subject of dispute. The question is EPA going to require it? U.S. Fish and Wildlife and NOAA have said that it should be done, and EPA is circling the wagons and saying what's done is good enough.
Assemblywoman Werner, I wanted to ask you this. You know, obviously, the fish is all part from the head down. How has the governor been doing on this?
You know, I think we would like to see EPA take responsibility. Many, many years ago, it was determined that EPA has the regulatory authority over this, not DEC. So the governor has directed his team to look at this, and it's really EPA that's got to make the call. So I would...
Well, is he putting pressure on them? I mean, he's the state, they're the feds. Was there pressure?
You know, I
don't
You're
a Democratic
really
Assemblywoman. I don't want to put you on the spot or anything. But
I'll be perfectly honest. I don't know that the governor is putting pressure on the EPA to do this.
That sounds like a no to me. Ned, do you agree with that?
It's true. The governor is not putting pressure on EPA to do this, and we've asked him to do so. We hope he does.
Assemblywoman, what's the tenor of the thinking in the legislature itself?
We had the entire Capital Region delegation and all of the folks up and down the Hudson River and across the state signed on to a letter last spring calling on the governor, DEC, and EPA to address this issue, to continue dredging until the problem is ameliorated. And I think that speaks for itself. This is something that across the state, this is not a partisan issue. Across the state, people understand the importance of the Hudson River as an economic engine in our state, as an environmental resource, and we want to see it cleaned up.
Well, you know, GE has tremendous power. We know that. I live in Massachusetts. They wanted to get GE headquarters over there. And now there's a certain amount of dumping that's going on in my end of the state, you know, the western end of the state. And there are people who are saying, well, did the governor look the other way in order to get... I mean, that's the kind of question we all want to ask in terms of leadership, isn't it?
I think we would like every level of government to get behind cleaning up this river. As the film indicated, as Ned has said, this is going to take pressure from all levels of government to bring the parties to bear to get this done. We've seen the municipalities up and down the Hudson River. We've seen the counties up and down the Hudson River. The state legislature has called for it. We do need the governor to get on board with this. But more than that, we need the EPA to step up and do the right thing. And that is, it is their responsibility as the regulatory agency to enact this cleanup process, and we need them to do this.
Well, I realize you're being politic in the way you're approaching this, but on the other hand, if the Democratic governor of New York State calls the Democratic administration, you know, in Washington and says, get on the stick, it's got to help, doesn't it?
Well, I would say it couldn't hurt. The key is that we've got a regulatory agency that's not doing its job, and all of us need to call for it. Every voice needs to be heard on this. And sure, it would help if the executive of the state made that call. But I think the voices are there. The state legislature has called for it. The municipalities have called for it. The counties have called for it. The advocacy groups, the ordinary citizens are calling for this. And if the EPA can't hear our voices, then we got a problem with the EPA.
Okay. Ned, please.
Alan, the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York has taken one recent important step. They have committed to joining with the other trustees in this five-year review. Every 5 years after commencement of a cleanup, a Superfund cleanup, EPA is required to take a look at whether the project is going to achieve the goals it set out. EPA conducted such a review in 2012, but it was basically a check-the-box exercise. They knew the outcome they wanted in advance, and they just conducted it in 30 days. It's supposed to take 6 to 9 months. They did it in 30 days, and only when we brought a lot of pressure to bear. We went down to Washington, D.C. We met with the top assistant administrator responsible for the Superfund program, and we said, we need an accelerated five-year review so that we can quickly find out whether this is on track. They agreed to that. They've commenced this five-year review, and it's going to look at all the parameters that were established for the cleanup. So U.S. Fish and Wildlife, NOAA, and New York State DEC are going to be at the table. That's an important step, and we're pleased that DEC is on board. And we've heard the science directly from Fish and Wildlife and NOAA, and we think it's very sound. And so we're calling on EPA to make sure that the other players, the other trustees, are given equal stature in this context.
Okay, so I want to go to David Carpenter, of course, great hero for so many of us, and a physician and a guy who really has thought about public health for a long, long time. David, you said earlier, when we were watching a film and in other times, you pointed out some alarming things about the increase in diabetes, heart disease, cancers, as a result of people who live closer, even though they may be economically more advantaged, to the river. I grew up close to the river. Am I doomed?
Well, Alan, you're right. You know, I've been involved in study of health effects of PCBs for many, many years. I was a member of the panel of the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is part of the World Health Organization, that has rated PCBs as group one known human carcinogens. We all have PCBs in our body, but the risk of cancer for each of us is a function of how much PCBs we have in our body. Now, how do you get PCBs in your body? Well, a lot of the attention around the Hudson River, and it's been appropriate, has been that the fish living in the river accumulate PCBs, and when you eat those fish, you accumulate them, you take the PCBs from the fish fat, and they stay in your body. I've often used the number that if you had a contaminated fish for dinner last night, you will have half of the PCBs in that fish still in your own body for 10 years from now. The only exception is if you're a pregnant woman that breastfeeds your child. If you breastfeed three children, you can reduce your body burden to half, but it all goes into your child. Now, cancer is a big thing. Everybody knows cancer and everybody's afraid of it. But a lot of my research lately has focused on different diseases and also different routes of exposure. And while we haven't manufactured PCBs in this country since 1977, our knowledge of how bad they are continues to grow much more rapidly than they decline either in our bodies or in the environment. Now, as was mentioned in the film and Alan just mentioned, we have studies that have been published in some of the best scientific journals that show that people that live adjacent to the Hudson River, all the way from Hudson Falls down to Manhattan, have more hospitalization for common diseases like heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, respiratory infections, asthma. Most people don't think about these diseases being related to any environmental contaminant, particularly PCBs. Well, let me tell you that they are. And I think our recent studies have really proven that point. Now, we've published these results about people living in zip codes on either side of the Hudson River. And we hypothesized that, all right, those people don't eat contaminated fish any more than anyone else does in all likelihood. So the root of exposure must be breathing PCBs from the air. Now, EPA has given no major thought until very recently about PCBs in the air. PCBs are semi-volatile chemicals. That is, they're not very volatile. They're not as volatile as the gases around fracking sites, but they do volatilize. And the PCBs are a mixture of 209 different chemicals, but the ones that are more volatile are those that don't have as many chlorines. PCBs can have from 1 to 10 chlorines around the biphenyl rings, and those with only a few chlorines are much more volatile. They're much more water-soluble. Well, we know that PCBs leave the Hudson River and go into the air because they volatilize from the air. So it's these lower chlorinated PCBs. Now, I think our definitive studies come from work around the St. Lawrence River, not the Hudson River, where I've worked for many, many years with the Mohawk Nation of Akwesasne. We have taken blood samples from 700 and some Mohawks, I guess 500 Mohawks. I'm confusing my studies. And we have found that the higher the PCB levels in the blood, the greater their risk of diabetes. And it's not just a trivial elevated risk. It's something like 3 or 4-fold when you compare the people with the lowest quarter PCB concentration to the highest. But in our recent study, we've done adjustments to try to figure out which of the PCBs are correlated with rates of diabetes. And it's not the highly chlorinated PCBs that are in the fish. It's the lower chlorinated PCBs that are in the air. Now, you and I can make a choice about whether we're going to eat a contaminated fish, but we really don't have a choice as to whether we're going to breathe the air. In another study that I've been very much involved in Anniston, Alabama, of the people living around the Monsanto plant that made the PCBs that are in the Hudson River, my colleague Mark Hermanson has demonstrated that you can use tree bark as a passive monitor of these PCBs in the air. And what he's found is that they move for 3 miles away from the landfills that contain the PCBs. All right, let's come back to my studies around the Hudson River. We're demonstrating that these wealthier, better educated, healthier lifestyle people living in zip codes on either side of the river have more hospitalization for diabetes, as well as the other diseases I've mentioned. Well, they live within about 3 miles of the Hudson River. They're breathing the air every moment they spend at home. My office is by the Hudson River, so I breathe the air also. I think that's the reason they have more hospitalization for diabetes, for heart disease, for heart attacks, for asthma, for respiratory infections. So we have got to get those PCBs out of the river, because if we don't, everybody living along the river is going to be at elevated risk for this great variety of diseases. And it's inexcusable that when we have this body of information, real proof that PCBs cause cancer, they cause these other diseases, and that the PCBs in the river are the fault of one particular company that has denied responsibility and refused to adequately clean up the contamination of the river. This is simply unacceptable. We must get those PCBs out of the river, or the health of everybody that lives by the river will be compromised for generations to come.
David, if I may, I want to ask Assemblywoman Werner a question, and that is, how concerned are your constituents about this?
I would have to say, on a scale of 1 to 10, my constituents are probably at an 8.5 to a 9.
Wow,
about
really?
This. Yeah.
For any political issue, that's a lot.
It is a lot, because the communities that I represent border the Upper Hudson River, and we're kind of ground zero for where this happened. And we know that there are health impacts that are happening in Hudson Falls and Fort Edward. We know that the economic impacts have been devastating in those regions. You know, this is a region that for generations depended on commercial fishing, depended on commercial transport, that is a tourism-based economy to a great degree. And all of those things have been depressed as a result of the fact that the river isn't clean any longer. So some folks are concerned because of the health risks. Some are concerned because they've lost their jobs. Some are concerned because the economy has been so significantly impacted. We're also seeing reduced property values in the communities along the river, which further depresses the tax base in a region that has lost a lot of jobs. And so the economic impact has got a lot of different levels to this. And so it is an issue that is deeply concerning to my constituents.
So it starts with the cognition. People know that it's there. But then, because I know what the pitch is here, you've got to get them to do something, to call their legislators, to call their congresspeople, to call the White House, to call the EPA. How do you translate from the idea that they know that they're in danger from this to getting somebody to actually pick up a telephone or write a letter?
Well, I know they write me, so I'm going to guess they're writing other members of their elected officials. You know, we have a very active CAG group, the Community Advisory Group. They are very involved and engaged. There's representatives from all of the communities. Scenic Hudson has had rallies in our district. They are very well attended. People are active and engaged in this. And you put out the call that says, today's the day. You make those phone calls, you write those letters, and they do it.
Well, Ned and David, I want you guys to feel free to jump in at any point. Ned?
Well, we've been using social media, Alan, in this film by John Bauermaster is very powerful.
And what's the name of the film again?
Hudson River PCBs, The Toxic Legacy of EPA and GE. That's a form version of it. And they can find that on Scenic Hudson's website and the website of Cleaner Hudson, Campaign for a Cleaner Hudson.org. So it's cleanerhudson.org. And they can see this video. It's 14 minutes, and it tells the story of how this river has been contaminated and the fact that it's still contaminated and that action is needed to address it. So distributing this video through social media, we've had at least 15,000 viewings of it.
Wow.
And people are encouraged after they see it to send an email to EPA administrator and to other elected officials so that they can bring pressure to bear.
David Carpenter, I wanted to ask you something. A long time ago, I went to PS 75, which is on 96th Street and West End Avenue on the riverside. Do we take special care now that we know about these things to protect our children from this?
Well, Alan, a very important question, because I think the answer is we haven't taken special care. You know, we've got this problem of PCBs in the Hudson. An emerging issue that most people are unaware of is that we have PCBs in lots of schools that were constructed during this period. This blew up in New York City, where there were still old fluorescent light bulbs that hadn't been replaced since the 70s that had PCB in light ballasts that were leaking and causing PCBs in the air. There are PCBs in caulking in old buildings. And the attention is on schools, but this is true for many old buildings. I've actually been involved in Malibu, California, where there's a major issue there. How many schools are by hazardous waste sites that contain PCBs? How many schools are within 3 miles of the Hudson River? And when students are in those schools, they're going to be breathing the vapor-phased PCBs. It'll be more in warm weather than in the middle of the winter, but we have not really focused on protecting children. Now, of the diseases that PCBs cause, I neglected to mention reduced IQ. Just like lead, PCBs cause a reduction in IQ, a shortening in attention span, and if there's anything you don't want in a school, it's anything that would reduce the child's ability to pay attention and to learn.
Just for perspective, lead versus PCBs, when you just mentioned some of the things that can happen, Are PCBs as dangerous as lead?
They are as dangerous as lead. And they haven't been studied as extensively as lead, and most people don't realize they're as dangerous as lead. The decrements in IQ are almost identical between lead and PCB exposure. In addition, a number of years ago, my group used animal models to try to understand how lead and how PCBs have effects on the brain in the brain areas that cause that are involved in learning and memory. And we find that they do identical things, even though obviously they're very, very different chemicals. So PCB effects on learning and memory are really important. And one should also say it isn't limited to children. It's also true for adults. And there have been a number of studies now of just memory skills in older adults that weren't around. They weren't children when PCBs were first manufactured. And again, older adults have these decrements in learning and memory if they're exposed to PCBs.
Assemblywoman, you said it wasn't partisan, this issue. But as we know, the New York State Senate has often been a part of the protect business at all costs, whereas the Assembly has been, I think it's fair to say, more people protective oriented. Are you finding that in this fight?
You know, as I said, I'm not finding this to be a partisan issue particularly at all. And certainly we had some senators who signed on to the letter. One of the things that is true is that this is impacting business. And we haven't mentioned yet the fact that we've got farmers who have farms that line the Hudson River. And for years, they irrigated their fields by pulling water out of the Hudson. And they now no longer can do that because who wants to eat strawberries that have been irrigated with water that's been polluted with PCBs?
And is it obligatory that they tell people that the strawberries were?
I don't know that it's obligatory that they do, but I don't believe that they are any longer irrigating their fields with that water. So that the river is polluted is impacting businesses. And I think that's sort of the nonpartisan aspect to this, that it isn't just the impacts on individuals, it's the impacts on businesses that this is having. So I think we can look at the individuals and the municipalities that have called for the dredging to continue, and we can see that they're, you know, people are not standing on partisan grounds here. They're all saying, whether you're, you know, no matter how you are focused on this, if you look at this issue from a variety of different angles, what you come up with is we have got to clean the river up. This is having too many impacts across the economic spectrum for us to leave this situation as it exists today.
So, Assemblywoman, what is the fix? In other words, is it a sense of the legislature to be passed on to EPA? Is it funds from the state that could do some of this? What do you want to do with it?
It is the EPA's job to mandate the cleanup of the river. The funding for this should come from the offending party. You know, sure, we could say that the state should contribute, but what's the rationale for that?
Okay, so what do you want to do legislatively?
I want us all to call on the EPA to do its job. This is, you know, we also have federal elected officials that have not come out and called for this. The EPA has the responsibility to do this, and they are not doing it. We need everybody to call on the EPA to enact their regulatory responsibility and call on GE to clean up this river.
Yeah, I just want to join Assemblywoman Werner in focusing attention on EPA. And she has taken a really courageous leadership position. Very few have been as outspoken and courageous and on the mark.
And why is that, Ned?
Well, GE is out there contributing to many campaigns. GE is very powerful with lobbyists, with public relations. So I don't know exactly why, but we know that GE is, as Aaron Mayer put it in the video, a juggernaut
out there. I don't want to give you guys a hard time, but you said this is not a partisan issue.
It is.
Then you called Assemblywoman Werner courageous.
Right.
That means there are a lot of guys and women who are not courageous in the legislature.
Well, we've had virtually the entire assembly has signed a letter calling on GE to do additional cleanups.
But not the Senate?
This is a nonpartisan issue, as Assemblywoman has said. We've had other legislators stand up with us at press conferences. I think it is a bipartisan issue. We've seen it federal administration after federal administration, starting with the first Bush administration, and the second and the third Bush administrations all did their part in advancing this cleanup. The Clinton administration did its part in advancing the cleanup. Unfortunately, we're now seeing the Obama administration drop the ball. So
why?
I don't know. We're baffled as to why EPA is not doing what it should do. We can't imagine why an agency with the clear authority to do the job, hearing from fellow federal agencies that there's a problem, why they wouldn't bring all parties together and find the common ground that clearly indicates that more cleanup is needed.
Okay, we have a note from the audience. Such a compelling case persuasively presented. What can I do? What can we do to get the river clean? And then, as a coda, says, my dog swims in the river. Should I worry? Really?
Okay, well, I'll defer to Dr. Carpenter on the second question, but what we are asking people to do is to tell EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy to require additional cleanup, to direct her regional office, which has been managing this project, to do the right thing, bring the Fish and Wildlife Agency, NOAA, and New York State together and lay out the case for more cleanup because the science requires it. Her phone number is 202-564-4700. That's 202-564-4700. Her email address is mccarthy.gina@epa.gov. So that's mccarthy.gina@epa.gov.
Let me just intervene and say that WAMC does not lobby. We don't lobby. You lobby. I want to make that distinction. And we talk to lobbyists all the time.
Thank you, Alan. Dr. Carpenter, would you like to
let me answer the second question of whether you should worry. And the answer, from my perspective, is a clear yes. If you live within any distance of the Hudson River, or if you work with any short distance of the Hudson River, 3 miles is probably the right one, you should worry about your health, the health of your children, the health of your family, because just simply living there is enough to risk exposure and development of these diseases.
What about animals like a dog?
Animals have the same physiology as people, and they can accumulate the PCBs, and then if it's an animal that we eat, that's another route of exposure. So,
yeah, but I'm not talking about those. The specific question is, my dog swims in the Hudson. Is this the end for Fido? Should Fido not be allowed to swim in the river?
Fido shouldn't swim in the river.
Okay.
And he shouldn't eat the fish or anything else in the river.
Here's another question. How can the EPA allow GE to quit dredging? How much does the Koch brothers play into this? Can we compete? And to say nothing of the amount of money that General Electric has to spread around. Who wants to go on that one?
In the film, there was a line that I think Althea said, which was absolutely right, which is the original project was goal-oriented, clean up the river, make it possible for people to eat fish and swim in the river in a reasonable period of time. And they turned it into an engineering project in which there were specific amounts of toxic material that was supposed to be taken out over a very specific number of acres in a defined geography. And so they did exactly what was required of the engineering work. And because of that, EPA has said they're done. Now, what they are not doing is they are not looking back and saying, what was our goal and was our goal achieved? And the answer to that question is very clearly the goal was not achieved. We can't eat the fish, we can't swim in the river, we can't bring boats up there anymore. So that's the problem, is that they made it an engineering project. The company met the letter of the engineering, but they did not make the spirit of the project.
Interesting. What happens to the PCBs after dredging? What happens to the stuff? Not only the wildlife, but where does it end up? This is pretty interesting for me because I live in Western Massachusetts, where this is now a great debate, same agency. Does anybody know where the stuff goes?
The PCBs are taken out of the river. They're put through what's called a dewatering facility. It separates the solids from the liquid. They're tested, and those that exceed the threshold for contamination are taken to permitted hazardous waste landfills outside of the state.
And where are those?
I'm not sure. I believe last time I heard was one in Texas.
One additional thing on that is that PCBs put in a secure landfill will never degrade to any degree at all. Now, human health will be protected if they don't migrate into groundwater, if they don't go into the air, but they will not go away. Now, the General Electric argument for many, many years is let the river take care of itself. They'll all disappear. That was totally false. There is some degradation of PCBs by bacteria in the river in the sense that they can take PCBs with lots of chlorines and make them into PCBs with fewer chlorines. But I've just told you that PCBs with the fewer chlorines are the ones that are the most dangerous. Now, those that have left the river have gone really two places. Some of them have gone into the air, and everyone around the river is breathing them. Also, some of those PCBs that go into the air migrate up around the world. And I've got another project in northern Alaska with an Alaskan Native project that have, the people there have high levels of PCBs, and there are no local sources, so they're getting them from spread around the world. The other place that PCBs from the Hudson can go is they can wash out into the Atlantic Ocean. Well, now what we're finding is that marine fish from the Atlantic, from the Pacific, contain significant amounts of PCBs. So I think most reports say that 90% of the PCBs before dredging that ever went into the Hudson River are still there. But those that have left, they haven't been destroyed for the most part. They're in the air, they're in the Atlantic, and they're still causing health problems. So David, you've got to get them out of the river.
Now, David, when you're transporting this toxic stuff from here to Texas or wherever, does that represent a risk?
Well, there is certainly a risk. I know when they were dredging the Reynolds Metal site at the St. Lawrence River, what EPA did was put all the dredge sediments on a concrete slab and let it slowly dry, which is about the worst thing you could do. Now, I'm not familiar with exactly how the dewatered sediments from the Hudson were treated. But the point is you don't want them to dry in the air because then the PCBs will volatilize.
And in fact, in western Massachusetts, that's just what the fight is about now. What they're trying to do is take out the sediment and just dump it in certain towns and villages. And you might imagine the parents and others are not very happy about that.
That's what GE wants.
Yes.
That's what GE. And just to give a little context to what you're saying, Alan, General Electric had not only plants on the Hudson River above the Capital District, but they had a plant in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, on the Housatonic River. And they dumped PCBs in the river around the same time period that they were dumping them in the river in the Hudson. And so there's been a battle for many years in Massachusetts and in Connecticut about how much of that mess should be cleaned up by GE, and they're debating it, and GE is refusing to do what EPA is asking them to do in Massachusetts now.
David, do the PCBs get into the drinking water?
Yes, they do. And this, again, is an issue that hasn't had much attention. I was actually invited to talk with the people in Waterford before the dredging occurred. The issue was that the people there were concerned, since Waterford derived its drinking water from the Hudson, they were concerned that dredging would increase the PCB content in the drinking water. Well, PCBs in water are in two forms. A lot of the PCBs are bound to particles. PCB like to bind to soil. And so when the dredging occurred, it did stir up the sediments, so the particulate PCBs were elevated. Well, most drinking water treatment plants are very good at removing particles, including the PCBs bound to the particle. What hasn't gotten attention is the PCBs that are dissolved in the water. And like those that are in the air, these are those with few chlorines. And in fact, we went into the Waterford Town Hall and took a measurement of the drinking water from the drinking water fountain before dredging. And we could measure in my lab 120 parts per trillion of PCBs in that drinking water. That was before dredging. So people that are deriving drinking water from the Hudson River are getting a source of exposure. Now, again, the particles are removed, but we have a lot of attention now to chemicals dissolved in water that are not removed in drinking water treatment. For example, your neighbor's birth control pills and psychiatric medication flushed down the toilet can end up in your drinking water, and unless you have a very powerful activated charcoal system, they're not removed. The same is true for these lower chlorinated PCBs, which our results suggest are among the more dangerous ones, for at least for diseases other than cancer.
Yeah, and let me jump in, Alan, if I could. So because of Flint, Michigan, and because we've now found PFOAs, another chemical contaminant, in Hoosick Falls in New York, there's a lot of attention now on drinking water. And in addition to what Dr. Carpenter is saying, there are people with private wells around GE plant sites whose water has been contaminated by GE's PCBs. And this is a very, very contentious issue, but it's not being addressed in the way that we're seeing all the attention to the PFOAs. And so we're trying to make it clear that this is a drinking water issue as well. Another issue, and Roger Downs is here, our great colleague from the Sierra Club, who is very eloquent, as was Aaron Mayer from the Sierra Club in the video, about the fact that people are still eating these fish. Even though we're up here saying you can't eat the fish, there are people, particularly poor, many immigrant populations, who subsist on Hudson River fish. This is their main source of sustenance. And they're either not reading the health warnings, there are very few signs drawing attention to them, or they're saying, I don't have a choice. I have to eat this fish. So these are called institutional controls when EPA says, oh, we're going to have health warnings. Well, they're not working. So this is another reason why, as Dr. Carpenter and Assemblyman Werner have said, we need to get the PCBs out of the river. And finally, EPA did not take into account the airborne pollutants that Dr. Carpenter is talking about here. That was not a pathway that EPA considered in determining what the extent of the cleanup should be. So once again, the EPA-mandated cleanup falls short because it has failed to take into account real science that must be brought to bear.
Now, when there was an argument against dredging the PCBs, there were those who said, maybe on the side of industry, if you mess with them and you start to dredge them, they'll get into the air more easily. That was the argument, as I remember it, during that time.
That, Alan, was a marketing campaign by General Electric. In fact, I think it's one of the most effective marketing campaigns ever conducted by a corporation. They had national media telling people that the PCBs are better left on the bottom of the river. The science has debunked that. That has been completely discredited. But I go around the country, on the West Coast and the Northwest, and I tell people I'm involved with the Hudson River, and they say, oh, are you trying to get the PCBs cleaned up? And I say, yes. And they say, isn't it better to just leave them on the bottom? That's because GE was so effective at spreading that incorrect information.
Hmm. David, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think that incorrect information was very effective, and it's still something that people will say. But I'd like to go back to something that Ned said, and that is about the people that are eating the fish out of the river. This is an issue of economic disparity that's a very important one to understand, that we have poor people that can't afford to buy food from supermarkets that are having to resort to eating the fish and get then exposed to PCBs that are causing all of these other diseases, including decrements of cognitive function. So it's just inexcusable. It's unethical that we have a situation where the most disadvantaged members of our society already are further disadvantaged because of the contamination in the Hudson.
How do people find out? We had one question from the audience. How do people find out what their particular dangers are? In other words, could you go to a website and find out how many PCBs are in the air? Can you find out in a particular region how dangerous this is?
I don't know of any central site that has that kind of information. The place where that should be, it would be on EPA's website. There's a lot of information about PCBs on EPA's website. As Ned said, they have not paid any attention to vapor phase PCBs until very recently, and recently really triggered by the New York City school situation where pure PCBs were dropping on a student's head in a classroom from a leaking ballast. But EPA is now in the process of developing better standards. They do not have good standards for PCBs in air. They have guidelines that are grossly under-protective. But they are at least now considering through the IRIS program, which determines cancer risk, they are beginning to evaluate airborne PCBs as cancer risk factors. But much more needs to be done.
So we have another question about how can somebody who's living near the river reduce their exposure, besides moving, obviously?
Well, they could stop breathing. But practically, it is very important to reduce their exposure by never eating Hudson River fish. The primary route of exposure for most people that don't live by the Hudson or other specifically contaminated sites is that PCBs have distributed through all animal fats. We know for a variety of other reasons that excessive consumption of animal fats is not healthy, but that is just another reason to reduce your consumption of animal fats, even if you don't live along the Hudson River or in any other site that's got excessive PCB contamination.
Interesting. Assemblywoman Werner, I'm afraid I'm doing a bad job leaving you out of this, but I wondered about the politics of the situation. Can you give us sort of an overview as to what you're hearing from your colleagues, what they're saying about this?
You know, certainly my colleagues in the Capital District who represent other parts of the Hudson River are speaking as I am about the public health issue, about the economic impact, and the need to continue this dredging project until we get to the point that the volume of PCBs in the river is diminished to the point where you can once again use it in all of its recreational and economic ways. So I think that, you know, we are definitely very cognizant of the impact of the project not continuing, and with the municipalities that we represent, you know, trying to find the lever in the regulatory process to push on to get this done. And we pushed on the state, and the state's answer very clearly was, it's the EPA. They have the responsibility. That's where the lever is, and you've got to push on the EPA to get to the table and hold GE accountable.
So I don't want to give you a hard time, and I know this is the kind of thing that would make any politician think twice, but it says here, Alan, why, in your opinion, is Governor Cuomo so feckless on this issue? Another example of his leading from behind, question mark?
You know, I'd be the last one to speak for the governor. He can speak for himself.
How about speaking at him?
I think all levels of government have got to be lined up around making sure that our river is cleaned up. This is an economic engine. This is an environmental justice issue. The longer this goes on, where the river cannot be used fully, the more negative impact it's going to have on New York's economy. So it is incumbent on all of us at all levels of government to get behind this project and get it done. So, yeah, I'd like to hear the governor call for it. I'd like to see our federal representatives call for it. I'd like to see our president, like the presidents before him, stand up and say to GE, clean up the river. All of us at all levels of government have got to get on board with this. The Hudson River has been a waterway that is of importance to us nationally from a commerce perspective, from a tourism perspective, and to leave it in the current state to expect that just time will heal this wound is foolish. And I think everybody at all levels of government should do what I'm doing, and that is call for the EPA to do their job.
Ned?
Yes, Alan, I agree with the Assemblywoman again and agree this is a nonpartisan issue. Scenic Hudson is an organization that doesn't endorse any candidates. We simply call on the candidates to take action, and we don't.
Well, no, but Ned, I'm sorry to give you a hard time, but there are political realities. There's a reality as to whether or not, and I've tried to ask those questions, whether the same kind of support for cleaning up the Hudson is coming from the Senate as it is from the Assembly.
And we've had many senators who signed on. So again, it's not a partisan issue. I just wanted to raise one other technical issue, and that is that the Champlain Canal was once a vibrant and important commercial navigation channel, and that has been fouled by PCBs, and as a result, the New York Canal Corporation has not been able to fulfill its constitutionally mandated duty of dredging that canal so that the shipping channel would be reopened to deep water commercial vessels. And the upriver communities are crying for this to be done. And this could be done, again, We think it's within EPA's authority to require additional dredging and to address this 136 acres that would encompass areas of the Champlain Canal. So it's one more. This is an economic issue as well as an environmental and health issue. And we know that many of the communities upriver have waterfront revitalization plans. They have marinas. They have boat launches that are basically just inactive and can't be implemented because EPA is failing to require the kind of comprehensive cleanup that they should.
David Carpenter, we've had a couple of very specific questions. Can you measure the PCB levels in your body, number one? And number two, what can be done to alleviate a large number of PCBs in your body?
Well, good questions and difficult answers. We all have PCBs in our body. There is very little that you can do to eliminate them. Now, the only thing that's proven effective is eating olestra, the non-absorbable fat. You can buy Pringles potato chips made of olestra. It'll give you violent diarrhea. You will lose all of your fat-soluble vitamins. But it has been demonstrated if people take these olestra potato chips for 5 days a week and then off for 2 days so that they can get their vitamins, slowly the PCBs move from your body fat into this non-absorbable fat in the gut, and it can reduce your level. I'm not advising it.
And what are these potato chips again?
Olestra is the...
Olestra.
It's a fat that is not absorbed from the gut. And if you remember the president of Ukraine that was poisoned with dioxins, and there was an earlier case of a woman that tried to kill her husband by feeding him dioxins. In both cases, they were treated with this non-absorbable fat, and it did reduce their body content, but it's not a pleasant way to get the PCBs out of your body.
And David, another person wanted to know here about the fish. Let's assume we cleaned up the Hudson, and the fish that are living were still there. How long before that fish would be safe to eat?
Well, the fish that has the PCBs in their body is never going to be safe to eat. But fish don't live as long as people do. So,
you know how long they live?
Well, it depends on the species, but most fish don't live more than 10 years. And a lot of the smaller fish live much less than that. So if we get the PCBs out of the river, over time, the fish will be safer to eat. There's some pretty good evidence from, what's this river in Wisconsin? The Fox River, where there, I think it's the largest dredging project prior to that of the Hudson. And the levels of PCBs in the fish came down in a remarkably short time, with a period of several years. So we're not going to have fish that have no PCBs, but we can have concentrations that are not so blatantly dangerous to consume.
And Alan, EPA's cleanup plan, the original plan, called for relaxation of some of these fish consumption advisories in this year, 2016. Now, GE caused delays in commencement of the cleanup, so that goal would have to be postponed by a few years, several years for that delay. But still, those goals were intended to be achieved within this decade. And now, because EPA has required such a limited cleanup that didn't address this three times the amount of contamination, and because they're now defending that and not listening to their fellow agencies, science, sound science, we're looking at generations before we'll be able to eat those fish.
Ned, we've had another interesting question, which is other people have put pollutants into the river besides GE. What's being done about that?
Well, we've seen through implementation of various laws and rules in New York State a dramatic improvement in the health of the Hudson River. And people always tell me, who lived in Tarrytown, they used to be able to tell what color car General Motors was making in the General Motors plant in Tarrytown because it was in the river by the end of the day. The river was red or blue that day. So that's not happening anymore, and there has been enforcement of stringent controls on the discharge of pollutants from factory pipes and so forth. The remaining challenge, Alan, is wastewater treatment plants that don't have the capacity to handle sewage and stormwater. And this is an area where additional expenditure and investment of funds by the state and federal government is important, because when you have a storm, you have raw sewage going into the Hudson. And that, in addition to the PCBs, those are the two issues that still need to be addressed for a clean, healthy river.
But in your mind, in David's mind, in Assemblywoman Werner's mind, PCBs are the number one pollutant that we have to worry about.
Without question.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so is there a GE side to all of this? You know, what's the GE?
Well, I can speak for GE. You know, I can say what they're saying, and that is they've done what EPA required, and so there's no obligation for them to do any more. Well, what they're not acknowledging is that they face the natural resource damage liability. The federal law has two components. One requires a cleanup. The second requires restoration of the natural resources that have been damaged. So we've had decades of lost value in the river. They will be held accountable for that.
Are you sure they'll be held accountable?
I'm not sure, but the law requires it. And so the that's what the natural resource trustees.
We talk about the banks being too big to fail. Is GE too big to fail?
Well,
to be held responsible?
I hope they're not too big to be held accountable, because that's what we're expecting our federal and state governments to do. But GE could come to the table now and say, as other polluters around the country have done, we want to put this behind us. So we are going to voluntarily cooperate with these federal and state trustees to get the job done. Let's have a fair assessment of the natural resources damage. BP did this after the Gulf spill. They did the best they could to clean up, and then they entered into a voluntary natural resource damage settlement.
Ned, we are out of time, so I wanted to ask you very quickly, does GE have enough money to do this?
Absolutely. GE has said year after year that the cleanup of the Hudson will have no material impact on their financial condition. So this is a hopeful situation. Despite the negative things that we've been saying here, there is hope here. GE has proven that it can do this cleanup effectively. GE has the resources. EPA has the authority. It can be done in a couple more seasons and then lay the groundwork for a natural resource settlement.
Unfortunately, I do really mean that. We have to leave the discussion there because we're out of time. I'd like to thank our sponsor for today's discussion, Scenic Hudson, and President Ned Sullivan. I'd also like to thank our old friend, David Carpenter, MD, Director for the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University at Albany, and New York State Assemblywoman Carrie Werner, a Democrat from the 113th District, Round Lake, New York. I'm Alan Chartok. You're listening to WAMC Northeast Public Radio.
Been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at wamc.org.